WHFR Dearborn. Highway 61 is on the air with nothing but the finest in blues.
Time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end?
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal for October 28th, 2011. It's wonderful to be back in Dearborn, Michigan. I want to thank Dennis and Lindsay for sitting in for the Journal last week. Local news, alternative views certainly happened, and we wouldn't be leaving you in the lurch unless we continued this tradition. Of course, today, and it is getting exciting because very, very important civic duty and all that. The course of your future destiny will be decided. Okay, that's slightly exaggerated, but it'll still happen one way or the other for those that go and vote on Tuesday, November the 8th. And so that's just a week from next Tuesday. We're continuing our special interviews with candidates for Dearborn Heights City Council. The challengers, in fact, there are a couple more candidates who are incumbents. And if you don't know who they are and already know their record, well, too bad for you. The incumbents, many of whom have a lot of interesting ideas and maybe, in fact, by your assessment, better choices for the council, don't have all the access to campaign funds and don't have necessarily the attention of everyone that the council candidates, the incumbents, already have. So here we go, and let's talk to our special guest today is Lisa Hicks Clayton. That's HICKS-CLAYTON, who is a candidate for Dearborn Heights City Council. And Dennis Reimar is our WHFR News Director, is here too. So welcome both Dennis and Lisa.
Hello, Lisa.
Hello.
There we are.
There we are.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for having me today.
Thank you for joining us. Hey, Jay, good to have you back. The place did not burn down while you were gone.
Obviously not.
There we go.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say about it.
That's right. I'll talk to you about that show afterwards.
Yeah, no.
I have listened to it.
I have stuff to do right after. Mm-hmm. Here we are. We're fortunate to have Lisa here with us. And I wanted to, something that, that I'm very interested in is a little bit about your background. Because I know you have an education in your background, as a little military also, and I wondered what brought you to this particular, not crossroads, but juncture in your professional life.
All right, well, I'll tell you a little bit about myself. I am a mother of three. I have three children. Damon, who's 20, he's 82nd Airborne, very proud of him. I have a daughter, Devin, who's 18, University of Wisconsin. And I have my youngest is Marissa, who's 8, who attends Dearborn Heights Public Schools. I've been involved with community for 26 years, community advocacy, and my military experience is what really led me to that juncture, so to speak, in the road, and it's changed my life and everyone around me. It's brought me great joy, but it's taught me the value of looking around you, looking at people, knowing them, knowing what your community needs, and learn how to assess those needs and also how to work together to solve problems. So I've continued to do that. I was a mayor for Fort Ord, California, which is an Army installation, which did close in the 90s. Mm-hmm. But that was a wonderful experience. We took that base actually through closure, so that was definitely had ups and downs. As far as my education, I was nominated to Annapolis out of high school and the Naval Academy by United States Senator Paul Simon, and I decided actually to take a full athletic scholarship to Southern Illinois University and ended up at University of Florida in Gainesville.
Wow.
So I traveled around. The funny thing about the story, my major was political science with a minor in history, and I went into teaching. And I absolutely love teaching. I taught for 23 years as a certified teacher. I've been on the administrative side, so I'm very familiar with human resource management and budgets. And, you know, here we are in Dearborn Heights. I've been here for a while. Being a military family, we've had the opportunity to move around quite a bit. I love living in Dearborn Heights. We're establishing our home. This is where we'll be the rest of our lives. And I'm very involved in the community, and I had the opportunity to do that from the get-go, right out of the gate, as soon as we moved here.
Now you said you've been in Dearborn Heights about 4 years.
About four and a half.
Four and a half years, and you love it. At the same time, something sparked your interest in, I mean, let's face it, in city council you have the opportunity to make change.
Absolutely.
And something about that appeals to you. What is it that you're looking at that you're like, I need to do something?
Well, what appeals to me is, you know, I'm a City Beautiful Commissioner, and I'm involved with the Commission on Aging, and I'm also president of Gulfview Manor Civic Association. I'm a neighborhood watch coordinator, actually, keeping our residents safe. It's all about being involved and being connected, and I want to enable our residents also to be involved and connected to their city government. This is our city, and that's really the change I want to see. I think our best resource here would be our residents, and I just love to be involved. I like to be able to make a difference and take the opportunity to make improvements. You know, if there's an opportunity to improve something, to continue to grow our community, to make it especially viable for the future. We're in a situation now, budget-wise, where we need to be looking to the future, not just staying afloat for another year. Yes, that is, of course, the immediate attention. You know, we need to look at that $5.1 million deficit, but we also need to be outlining where are we going and how are we planning to get there. I mean, you have to have long-term goals, and we also need to work collaboratively together to get to those goals.
Now, you know, it's interesting, and as Jay points out, we have the challengers on this show because the incumbents, and more often than not, they have the name recognition. And you've done something, it's not necessarily revolutionary, but it's very unique in your way. You're getting out there and meeting the people in a different way. And explain what you're doing as part of your campaign.
Absolutely. And I've loved doing this. What we've been doing, I have so many supporters. I'm thankful for all of them. We've been doing the door-to-door campaign and going out to the voters, talking with them, giving them information, and telling them about the election, telling them about what's on the ballot. Education is key in order to making a sound decision and voicing your opinion on November 8th. We're doing door-to-door campaign. I've had meet-and-greets. I've held those at the library. Any opportunity I've had to appear somewhere to speak or just meet the residents, whether it's a festival or event, I've tried to be there and attend. It's vital to get out and meet the residents, to hear what they have to say, and value those opinions. It gives us, again, opportunity to grow as a community.
Oh, my goodness. It's still the change in weather from Austin,
you're
Texas.
Still in Austin, for sure.
Yeah, sorry about that, folks. But we are talking to Lisa Hicks Clayton, who is a candidate for the Dearborn Heights City Council in the November 8th election. And very important that you go and vote if you're registered, and get other people to go and vote, too. Lisa, is this your first time running for council?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And what made you decide to run at this point in time, other than the fact that you are already, as you indicated, very involved with the city in many different committees and your neighborhood? Why the city council? Why now?
Well, I've spent quite a bit of time thinking about it, contemplating it, speaking with people in the community that are active, speaking with people who are close to me, including my family. Bless my family for tolerating me. But it's something that wasn't decided overnight. It was a lot of thought was put into it, and we had, as a group basically, had decided now was the time, and I'm ready for that. I'm ready to have that. I'm committed, I'm dedicated, and I have the enthusiasm to see this forward, you know, to move our city forward to a future of financial stability.
Well, let me just follow up on that. Obviously, you feel you're well qualified for the position, and now seems to be the time. Obviously, there's a time commitment, and you had to work with your family on that, no doubt, to see how you can adjust some of your other responsibilities for it. What especially can you bring to the console that you think is needed in terms of the problems facing it right now that might be different? And we don't necessarily want our people on these shows to criticize people who are already there or also running against you. Just tell your own story. But in terms of the issues that you're going to be facing there, current issues, what do you think you can bring as a special talent to help get some of these decisions going in the right direction?
Well, excuse me. Now it's my turn to have the frog.
I'm sorry, you're catching my frog.
It's contagious. You know, what I bring to the table, besides the enthusiasm and the commitment and the dedication, I do have experience, but I also have some ideas, just like many of our residents do, and actually these ideas come from our residents. And I think it's good to take a look and explore that. I think it's important to have communication with the residents. That's one thing that, you know, and I don't want to say change, because change sometimes people hesitate on. I think it's an improvement opportunity, but to have more communication opportunities available for residents, whether it's through technology or face-to-face opportunities. But I think those ideas, as far as improving communication, but also the accountability factor for our budget. I mean, I've worked with budgets extensively, and I do have an idea. I know how we should be assessing them on a regular basis. Actually, my budgets were reviewed monthly, so if they weren't in line, I could correct them. You know, that's what a budget is. It's kind of just a guideline. It's a forecast. It's not set in stone. If your revenue is down off of what you budgeted, that means your expenses are going to have to be adjusted as well. You're not going to spend money that's not there. But, you know, I think our city council is doing what they can with what they have, but certainly it wouldn't hurt to have some new creative ideas on board. And, again, just embracing our residents and what they have to offer.
You know, this is something, and this is out of left field, but I know that so often we talk about cutting things when things, and you know, when we talked before the show, you said that if we don't, in fact, have the opportunity to, if the millage doesn't pass, and we have to, there's still things that have to be done and they have to be cut. I'm always curious, and other than taxes, if the people and the leaders, the city leaders, have ideas as far as revenue building. Mm-hmm. Is that something you've thought about
at
all?
Oh, yes, definitely. That is something with the Women's League of Voters Forum that I had brought up and discussed. Let's not just talk about cuts here. Let's look at the other side of the budget page, which is really the top half, and talk about revenue opportunities. We have to look, whether it's city, community, beautification, improvement programs, to stabilize our property values, first of all. Mm-hmm. One, retain residents that we currently have, but also attract new ones. That's one of the reasons we moved to Dearborn Heights, was because of the attractiveness and how well it was maintained, the integrity. We need to continue to do that. We need to even look at opportunities to attract new businesses, whatever incentives. We have a great Chamber of Commerce. I'm sure if we network and work with our community business leaders, we would be able to come up with some ideas and resources to, you know, again, track new businesses or even tax abatements, whatever it takes, because we need to look at the bottom line of getting that revenue up. I wanted to say with the properties, and I have talked to the director of our building department extensively about this, very important is residents' participation and involvement here, because we have many properties that are turning into rental properties. That is money being left on the table. It's a challenge for the city. They admit that it is a challenge trying to keep up on those homes turning into rental properties. Of course, sometimes landlords don't want to tell you because they know the tax base is different. You have to go through inspections. You may have to do upgrades to meet codes. But for the safety of our residents and in all fairness for that revenue that the city should have, we need the residents' help by calling those things in. And that's something we're looking at, is working through ordinances, through building department, to not leave that money on the table. And I'm doing that now, even just as a candidate, because I care enough about the city, very concerned about the direction we're going for our future. I'm worried about the future. That's what I'm looking at. What's ahead? Not just 2012. Let's talk about 2015, 2017, 2020. What's ahead for us? And how, again, how are we going to get there? So revenue is vital.
So how do you feel about the Headley override proposal now on the ballot? Are you taking a position or letting the voters decide that and then dump it in your lap after you're elected one way or the other?
Well, we did discuss this earlier. Of course, I'm a resident, and I have my personal position, but as a candidate, my position is that I want the residents to be informed, to have the facts, to know here's the deficit, here's what happens, what's on the ballot, here's the wording, here's what a Headley override is. It's a reset to take us back to the maximum cap of 8.5 mils by our city charter. I want residents to have all those information facts so they can make sound decision. The town hall meetings were great, but there's more information online. You can call somebody, find out. There's another town hall meeting coming up on November 3rd at Stitt Post at 5:30. But I want residents to be informed, and I want them to be involved and make that decision.
Just brief interruption here for people who tuned in just a second ago. We're talking about Dearborn Heights, and this is Lisa Hicks Clayton, a candidate for city council in the November 8th election. But only in Dearborn Heights do they have what's called the Headley override proposal. I mean, Dearborn has a millage increase proposal, which is sort of directly called that. I think totals 3.5%, and it has a termination after 5 years to sort of make up for the money they lost by property values going down. Actually, the Headley override allows you to increase, is it just a little bit under 3 mils?
It's 2.9.
So in effect, it's also a millage increase, but you have to, and Dearborn doesn't have to, I guess, for whatever reasons. I think we were already lower or whatever, but you have to sort of negate the Headley proposal from 20 or 30 years back, which was a state taxation limitation, right? Mm-hmm. So I know I've read some opinions, and we have a couple in the papers, the local papers talk about people that specifically they don't think the Headley should be overridden. Maybe they're in favor of more financing for the city. I don't know how they'd get it, but at this point, the only answer, and in fact, your millage increase at I think 2.95 mils.
2.9449, right?
Yeah, whatever. It's just a little bit less than what Dearborn is asking for, but in fact, you have to override the Headley proposal in order to do that. So do you see a big issue there about the Headley override, or you just see the necessity for increased funding from property values, which, in fact, people have been getting less and less taxation on their annual bills because their property value went down. Of course, everybody would like to keep all that money, you know, but they haven't been paying as much for services in dollars. That's the argument made in Dearborn. So you're saying you think it's worth the increase?
Well, what I'm saying is residents have to, and I myself as a resident, have to decide what's important to us. And it's for something for us to settle in our own heart how we're going to vote on this. We know if it's approved, we still have a shortfall of $1.5 million. So there still may be there still will be changes. If it's not approved, then it becomes more severe of a picture. Mm. So we have to decide, what is worth it to all of us. You know, our public safety, you know, our police, our fire, DPW cannot be jeopardized. But I also feel, even though we say it's non-essential, such as Parks and Rec, our senior services, our rec department for our youth, even though we say they're non-vital, can I use the air quotes?
Air quotes,
non-vital. They are vital to somebody, and they can make a difference in somebody's life. I will never forget at the town hall meeting at Canfield, the elderly woman that stood up and talked about her husband passing away and how she was ready to give up. And she talked about going to Berwyn and making friends and getting connected. And that was a turning point for her. And that, to her, was vital. And the social interaction, networking, is vital to all of us. And even with our youth, these programs can keep them off the street, can give them a clear path to their future, versus taking that detour down the wrong road.
I know that in the last couple of months, we were covering the Dearborn Heights issues. You've already had some cutbacks to the fire department, mm-hmm. and I think some full-time fire people have already been laid off there, too. Mm-hmm. And there's been cuts in that regard. That's always a concern to people and in these difficult times, as they say. Apparently, unlike Dearborn, your library system has separate funding?
That is correct. It has its own millage.
So that's already in place. Mm-hmm. So that's the library services are not particularly correct. A threat at this point, although all if it's a millage, it means that there's still going to be probably a decline for the next year or two, the way the economy is going, that they project there'll still be less money coming in, even for your library system, much less your city services. Mm-hmm. But that's not being voted on out there. It's just the Headley proposal, which is necessary. Some people felt that out there that, well, where did this come from? Mayor Pletko, until a couple months ago, said you were doing fine out there. Then all of a sudden he's actually trying to project, and I don't know if you support his moves, but several years in advance, too, and sees that the guy, and then all, the last audit or whatever indicates there will be this crisis, and they came up with this proposal.
Right. It's very concerning. I know I attend the State of the City addresses and also went to the budget hearings, and it was not projected or displayed to be the magnitude that it is. Mm-hmm. However, what I have to say about that is we are all accountable, and this is where transparent government is important, and of course Governor Schneider has mandated, wants us to have that. But as residents, if this is our city, we need to be watching that, and how we know that trend was there, the downward, you know, property values, that we should have been adjusting that spending all for 3 years. The residents that say that are correct. Now, I don't know what circumstances were behind it, because we are not privy to all that information, and that's why we need transparent government. But as residents, I think we should be accountable. At least if you're not going to attend city council meetings, then at least watch them and try to keep up on what's going on in your city and how your or our tax dollars are being spent.
Other people in Dearborn Heights have commented over the last couple months, especially in regard to the Headley override, too, that if you went to the sessions that the city provided and the town meetings, that you understand where this came from and why it's one of only very, very few choices to maintain services, certainly, or try to keep them as close to current and future. And I'm not making an endorsement one way or the other, but people said those town meetings were quite informative, so it's good that you're recommending that people try to watch the videotape, League of Women Voters, which I think, Dennis, last week you gave the address as LOWV, and I think it's LWVDDH.org.
I was going to correct that. I'm sorry. I was nervous last week.
There's no O in there, but if you just Google League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights, you'll get to their site, no doubt, and try to watch that video, because apparently it was quite informative. You just need all the information you can get to make a good decision. As you said, whichever way people want to go, you try to make it as intelligent a decision with as much information as you can get at the moment. And that's always a good recommendation. So we've been talking with Lisa Hicks Clayton here, and now at the end of our time, I know it's not the end of our show hour, but it's the same time that the other candidates that we're going to be interviewing will get. If you could summarize in about 1 minute, if possible, the reasons why voters should give you their vote, as and they do get to choose 3 out of 5.
That is correct.
There's 5 candidates and there's 3 seats, and I don't understand that one person, and I read that, I think it's her, that her name is on the ballot, but she chose not to run.
That is Liz Aegis. Her name should not be on the ballot.
Won't appear at all.
She is on city council and has been for several years and has decided not to run for her seat.
So that's why we need the three
that
seats.
Is
so
correct.
You have three votes, people, out of the five names, two incumbents and three challengers, and Lisa Hicks Clayton is one of them. Mm. So, okay,
yes.
That's clear in my mind now. So why should they make you one of their three choices?
Well, I'm asking.
Or their only choice. People don't have to vote for three, right?
They don't have to. No,
okay.
Nope. It's everyone's choice.
Mm-hmm.
I am asking for your support and for your vote on November 8th. I am a resident, of course, of Dearborn Heights. I have a proven track record of dedication and service to the residents as a City Beautiful Commissioner, the Commission on Aging. I also do Neighborhood Watch Coordinating Program to ensure the safety of our residents. I've introduced the Stronger Family, Stronger Community Program and Senior Care Program. So just to name a few things, I've been involved in community service and advocacy for 26 years. I am ready to meet the challenge, and I'm dedicated and committed to seeing our city to the future of financial stability and a viable community.
Okay, well, thank you for that summary. When and where can citizens acquire more information about your candidacy or contact you directly? So if you'd like to give out a phone number, or if you have a website, or maybe an upcoming meet and greet somewhere in the next week before November 8th, if you could tell us about any or all of those now.
All right. We will continue our door-to-door campaign, so I hope to see people out and about in their neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. I'll come to your home. You can reach me by phone as well. I will provide my phone number to you.
Go ahead.
It's 313-633-1845. Again, that's 313-633-1845. You can find me on Facebook as well. Of course, you can find most of us on Facebook, it seems. Lisa Hicks Clayton for Dearborn Heights City Council. You can also, I'll give you my email address. It's HicksClayton4DHCityCouncil@yahoo.com. I do have a blog as well, which is www.lisasnews@wordpress.com. And I will also be at the engagement on November 3rd at Stitt Post at 5:30. Always available to meet with you and answer your questions.
What? Okay, I don't know Dearborn Heights that well, and I should. I'm right next door. Stitt Post, you mentioned it earlier. Is that a VFW post? Or
American Legion.
American Legion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Warren and Telegraph.
Okay, Warren and Telegraph. Stitt Post, and that's on November 3rd.
That is November
probably
3rd.
Probably in the evening?
5:30 p.m.
Oh, 5:30, okay.
Mm-hmm. Right before dinner.
All right. And folks, if you missed any information, just listen to our podcast again, Journal, under the talk show button at whfr.fm. Thank you so much for coming in today and letting our listeners know what your positions are and your background, and to allow them to more fully consider you as one of their up to three choices for the November 8th election. So we appreciate your time here today, and good luck in getting your message out.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
We'll be back with more Journal after these comments from our progressive national syndicated commentator. Here we go, Jim Hightower.
1 year from now, Americans will be caught in an unprecedented blizzard of campaign ads. Most of this ad blizzard will not come from the candidates, but from ads secretly funded by huge corporations. This is because a five-man cabal on the Supreme Court issued an edict that perverts nature itself. In a case titled Citizens United, the five decreed that, shazam, lifeless corporate elites are henceforth persons with more electioneering rights than us real-life persons. In a black-robe coup against our democracy, the Supremes rule that a corporation's money is speech and that CEOs may dump unlimited sums of it into their own ad campaigns to elect or defeat any candidates they choose. Of course, it's a grotesque, Kafkaesque lie to say that Walmart, Goldman Sachs, ExxonMobil, and the rest are people with political rights equal to, much less superior to, human beings. As a friend of mine puts it, a corporation is not a person until Texas executes one. The good news is that real citizens of our country are united against Citizens United. In a Hart research poll, 87% of Democrats, 82% of Independents, and even 68% of Republicans favor passing a constitutional amendment to overrule the court's bizarre decision and make clear that only people are people. Sadly, though not surprisingly, our national elected officials, including Republicans, Democrats, and Tea Partiers, are too hooked on corporate money to stand up for us, for America's democracy. So do we just have to surrender to the corporatos? Of course not. We're Americans. This is Jim Hightower saying, rebel! A new We the People campaign is rallying grassroots folks to sign a Declaration of Independence from Corporate Power. To sign and join the action, go to WeThePeopleCampaign.org. To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org. Astonishingly, some Wall Streeters continue to be clueless about what the Occupy Wall Street movement is protesting. Yoo-hoo, Streeters, note that the movement's name has the term Wall Street in it. While there's a plethora of particular issues being raised by the protesters, the unifying theme is a protest against the rising tide of economic inequality that's enriching the most privileged few by knocking down America's workaday majority. And guess who is the most powerful perpetrators of this greed-fueled disparity? Yes, Wall Street. For example, even as the protest was spreading in mid-October to hundreds of cities, executives at Bank of America announced three moves. One, to goose up their own extravagant pay, they're socking financially stressed debit card users with a new $5 a month fee. Second, they're dumping 30,000 of the bank's worker bees onto America's already swollen unemployment rolls. Goodbye and good luck finding another job. Third, two top executives who are departing the bank are being handed golden parachutes totaling $11 million. In the midst of this, Steve Bartlett opened his mouth. A former Congress critter who's now Wall Street's top Washington lobbyist, he is a perfect symbol of the infuriating corrupt coziness between financial elites and lawmakers. Yet, Bartlett blithely says that, quote, we don't see ourselves as the target of the protests. After all, he explains, Wall Street has to be well capitalized and well financed for the economy to recover. This is Jim Hightower saying, golly, Steve, what part of the public's multi-trillion dollar bailout of the street's elite did you not see? We the people see every glaring dime of it, and we also see that rather than helping our economy recover, you're now lobbying in Congress to kill Wall Street reforms so banksters can grab even more at our expense. What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
And this is the new WHFR Journal here on WHFR.FM, the station making waves. Jay Kornick here with Dennis Reimars, and we're hosting our public affairs show. We did just conclude our interview with Lisa Hicks Clayton, so if you missed it and just tuned in, go to our website, WHFR.FM, anytime after 2 o'clock today, October 28th, and it'll be there for you to click on talk shows and then journal button, and then October 28th for the show, and you can listen anytime, anywhere after 2 o'clock today, the 28th. Next week, we'll feature an interview with Scott Craig, who is also one of the five candidates for the three positions needed to fill the Dearborn Heights City Council. So it's Dearborn Heights City Council candidates who we're interviewing just one more time next Friday, November 4th, and then, oh boy, the big election on Tuesday, November 8th. Put that on your calendars. Make sure if you are registered, please go vote and help other people, get other people to remember and to get to the polls if they need that help. I'm sure that absentee ballots are still being handed out probably through next Friday. Not sure about Dearborn Heights and their city clerk policy, but if somebody really can't make it over there, maybe you could pick up a ballot for them, or I'm not sure how that happens. If you're going to be out of town, you can actually go directly to the city clerk's office in Dearborn Heights, or if you live in Dearborn, to the city clerk's office, and just fill out that absentee ballot right there. right at the desk and hand it back to them. So you don't have to send it in. Say, well, there's not time to send it in. You can just go over there anytime before the election, show them your ID, you know, your residency and so on, and make your choices at that time. League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights, does have a good guide that does explain and give summaries about the candidates and their points of view. That's available at the city clerk's offices in both cities, or, of course, at their website, lwvddh.org. League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights.
Or they can call 313-278-6476. 278-6476. And because I'm looking at this guide right now, it's pretty, pretty inclusive. And of course, they give them 75 words, which is interesting.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
I talked to Lisa about it, and she at the end of her little paragraph, there's dot, dot, dot. And, you know, that's because she went over. If you go over the 75 words, they don't cut you any slack. They just put dot, dot, dot. But she said it's because she's a very expressive person. So.
Well, there you are.
There you are.
Yeah, that's important. and we think, you know, to make a good decision about a candidate, the sound bites, that is the 5, 10, 20-second audio responses you might hear, and if I'm not sure how many of these candidates actually have their own video running on cable channels. I know certainly cable channels would love to sell some political advertising
if
they could, but not enough to make a full decision about a good decision, I think, about a candidate. So that's why we're doing, I know, the big 15, 20 minutes. It's still not everything, but it's probably more time altogether than what they got during those debates.
Absolutely.
So,
and you know what they do with the sound bites is it'll be the same thing and we'll hear it again and again and again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really just certain aspects of the issue.
Of course, if you can meet any of these people in person or they knock on your door, take a second or two, even if you're doing something else. There they are. They want to hear your points of view, and also maybe you got some questions you'd like to ask them. Only takes a couple minutes, and boy, in person, even better than radio, I'm sorry to say, but they're,
right.
You know, you get to see their facial expressions, their body language, and are they not really answering your question honestly because they move their eyes to the side a lot,
right?
You know, so a lot of information you can get about a desired candidate. Nothing more important after the education of your children than the people you have selected to guide your government, and especially local government. What matters to you most is what's right next door. I always say that. It's really true. They can take, the local government decisions can take more effect, more directly on your everyday life than state or federal government, too. And so a very important election out there in Dearborn Heights. Dearborn does not have any council candidates, but we've got some very important millages coming up. Let's take a look at some of the Dearborn papers, as we are wont to do on this show.
Well, I wanted to mention something that's going on starting a week from today, if I could, please.
Sure.
Starting November 4th, we have here at the Edry Auditorium in the McKenzie Fine Arts Building on our campus, November 4th is the beginning of Sleeping Beauty. Now, it is, in fact, put on by the Theater for Young Audiences, so this is tailored to the younger kids, elementary and middle school. I do know the director. We tried to get him on the show. Unfortunately, he's a director here, and he teaches courses in theater at the college, but he also has a full-time job in another theater in West Bloomfield. So Chris Bremer was not able. We will still try to maybe get, I will try to get a 5 or 10 minute interview with him and record it and bring it on the show either next week or the week after.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that Mr. Bremer has introduced, I'll call them more mature elements to this production of Sleeping Beauty, which only lasts 35, 40 minutes. But these mature elements are things that we as adults that are accompanying our youngsters, we can relate to. You know, just different things from familiar movies like Rocky and The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly and the movie Psycho.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just little references like that. It's all in good taste. And it's just a very enjoyable production. It starts November 4th. That's Friday through November 20th. It plays Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. Fridays and Saturdays at 7 p.m. Sundays at 2 p.m. It's a matinee. There are matinees Monday and Wednesday, Friday for the young kids through their elementary schools during the week. But
right, those have already been scheduled pretty much. Yeah.
If there's a chaperone out there that hasn't, please, you can probably still get in, but they're really packed. Anyway, so Thursday, Friday, and Saturday from the 4th through the 20th. Tickets are $12 for adults, $10 for students with ID, and also for people under the age of 18.
nothing like live theater, and this is our special theater for young persons program. Every fall, they put on plays for our young people from the local schools, as well as opening it up to family audiences on the weekends too.
That's right.
And so Henry Ford Community College Theater for Young Persons, and Chris Bremer is the director of Sleeping Beauty, and I'm sure there'll be some music and fantastic set design and costumes. Kids will love it. Families will love it. Continues all the way through November 16th.
November 20th.
20th. Okay, good. Even longer than I thought.
Sure.
And you can check out hfcc.edu website for the theater program, of course.
There you go.
Of course, Chris Bremer, if the name sounds familiar, yes, he is the son of Mary Bremer.
Mary Bremer Beer, who we had on the show maybe a month and a half ago.
That's right, because she's active here too, as well as active in the Dearborn Recreation Department theater program.
That's exactly right. So check out that. And Mirror News, we have a great article written by Ramsey Kazoo that's in the back, too. You can check that out about Sleeping Beauty and how it's different from some of the... There's actually, he does a great history of Sleeping Beauty and how it's different from some of those other productions.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
So looking at the press and guide from Sunday, October 23rd, we're going to go chronologically from the older to the new today, and actually turning the pages on the air, if you can hear them. What other radio shows would do this? You know, talk about local radio. This is an update on the court actions that have brought some seriously expensive judgments against Dearborn District Judge Mark Summers. Now, he is appealing. In fact, he's got two appeals, which because of just the workings of government and the courts, they said, oh, he didn't get it filed in time. Well, they did, and so it's now been reviewed by Circuit Court Judges Karen Ford Hood, Mark Cavanaugh, and Michael Kelly, and they did grant his motion for immediate consideration of two appeals, both tied to this lawsuit, the lawsuit filed against him by former Dearborn probation officer Simone Calvis. And, Judge William Murphy on September 23rd denied the appeals, and he said, well, they didn't get them in time. Well, there's all this evidence. I mean, come on, folks. It was a so-called clerical error on the part of the court. They had all the evidence there. So immediately, these three other judges reversed Judge William Murphy's decision. I'm just wondering how circuit court works. He had the evidence in front of them that they did not miss the deadline. I mean, it looked like they did, so maybe didn't see the other dates. But come on, I mean, it was immediately reversed, and they had to go to all this hassle to get things back on track. Now, whether or not the appeal will be how it'll be judged ultimately, at least it'll be judged now.
Right.
You know, your day in court. Even judges get their day in court if they're being sued. It's our system, as fair as we can make it. And so that's still to be decided what's going to be happening there. Unfortunately, the initial decision for this particular case is a judgment against Judge Summers. Actually now, which is also going to be probably appealed, the city of Dearborn may get stuck for that amount.
That's
if
right.
The appeal is not successful.
Right.
Yeah, so, but at least he's getting his day in court, and it was an error of the court system that they didn't look at the dates, that they had marked down a date that was days after the deadline when everything was in on time. Okay, UPS certified it. The court clerk even said they received it on July 11th, but for some reason they didn't put it on the docket until July 13th, which was too late. Oh my gosh, and then it just, you know,
it costs more money right there, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, right, to everybody, to
sure.
All of us, and that was just an error at in the court system. Congratulations to Hype Athletics. That's HYPE, which stands for something significant. They don't define it in the story, but of course they've been organizing various groups of young people for athletic programs and competition here for quite a few years now. It was started by Ali Sayed.
Who we had on the show.
We did have on the show. I think he was running for a city council position
in
Dearborn.
Mm-hmm.
But he was talking about that. And he was a 1999 graduate of Dearborn High School. And the goal of the tournament was to use athletics to unite the diverse ethnic groups in Dearborn area. Our recreation department has had fewer intramural athletics since Adre Appliance, the appliance store, and the death of Mike Adre, since they stopped being able to support all the cost associated. So Hype Athletics sort of took up some of the needed organizational lead to get those things challenged.
Yeah, you're right. I took it for granted, but Edre sponsored a lot of those
sports. Right. Oh, they put thousands, tens of thousands of dollars in local athletics. They were known for that. Even had the name Edre, of course, on the back of a lot of the jerseys and that for the different sports teams. But they deserve all the credit for helping the local people. So, but what they've gotten here is it shows they've gotten approval in Dearborn Heights. Sounds like our Dearborn Heights show today for a fantastic Hype Recreation Center. Hmm. And that's no hype. I'm sorry. Bad joke here. But that's not an exaggeration. They have gotten the fundings. Looks to me like, let's see, do I have page 16A with me? No, I didn't bring that far in the section. But it's got to be a multi-million dollar indoor athletic facility. And good for them. I'm glad they were able to work that out. But they do have now organized teams for almost any sports. You can think of basketball, football, baseball, soccer, volleyball, tennis, and other kinds of athletic development. And they have educational programs now, too, to help the community, sort of like Access did when they first got started.
That's exactly the parallel I was making. And when he was on the show, he talked about the good things to come, and apparently he followed up on a lot of those. Excellent.
Yeah, I guess we didn't have available land or funding for Dearborn, per se, but Dearborn Heights is the location for the new Wayne County Hype Recreation Center. So it seems like that will be good for all of our nearby communities to take part in. It's not just for Dearborn Heights residents alone.
No, it's for the county. Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay, turning on through here, it's interesting news from Henry Ford Community College that came up at the Board of Ed. That report from our counseling department on campus is that Henry Ford Community College may soon require students to talk to an academic counselor for advice before they're allowed to take a class over again for the third time. Now, why would they take a class that many times if they didn't pass before? Well, first of all, they could have passed, but maybe they want a higher grade.
Sure.
Maybe they want an A on their transcript instead of a C. That's the student's option here. But to take it for the third time, you should have pretty good notes left from the other couple of times. And it does seem like there might be some issues involved that you might need the advice of a counselor on. And so that it doesn't say it's definitely going to happen, but it may happen soon that before you're allowed, even in the computer system, to take it for the third time, you'd have to talk to the counselor. Now, apparently, Amy Blackburn, one of the trustees on our Dearborn Board of Ed and on the HFCC, the same people are also on the HFCC Board of Trustees, raised some questions about this because apparently it doesn't keep them from taking it the third time or the fourth or the fifth, but they have to talk to the counselor if it is more than the second time they've tried it.
That's interesting. Now, I know of financial aid. If somebody has financial aid, it's a whole separate thing. Financial aid will only pay for it twice, I believe.
Oh,
but with this, you know, there are many classes, I won't say many, there are some classes on campus that students purposely take more than once. And I'll give you an example. One of the prerequisites for the motion capture program we have here with Dr. Popovich is a computer class called Maya, and that's the name of the computer software, and it's basically
a 3D drawing program.
You got it, exactly, and it makes models, and you can rig them, and there's so much to this program that even 16 weeks is enough. So
it's intense.
It is. It's not uncommon for some of these students to come back two and three times to learn even more. And the teachers are very good at going into more depth with certain students while the other ones are wherever they're at ability wise. So that is the exception. I don't think they mean those particular classes. I think this is based on lack of academic progress.
Well, you can't really succeed in college without a good at least the average skills for writing and reading. And, of course, we have a program, and it's called developmental, that's actually below the writing and reading English 131 level, which is college credit transferable and so on. But if you're not at that level, you're going to be hurt in every class. So you really want to you know, not only get through English 131, but if you don't qualify for that by our placement test, you might even have to take over some of the preliminary, earlier, less advanced courses for writing and reading, and the English department has them all, and they certainly can bring you up to college level if your high school prep didn't succeed, which is kind of a crisis, too.
Well, yeah.
I mean, you graduate from high school, you get a high school degree, but you're not competent, you're not at entry level for college. That seems a shame, but these days you can't go back and sue your high school, unfortunately, for not preparing you. And we don't have higher student standards than anyone else here, but it's crazy to take like a class of English 131 if you're not ready for it yet. And that's why we have the placement test, because you're just going to keep failing that for a long time.
Right.
I'm sorry to say, but a significant number of our people that are accepted here at the college with high school graduation certificates, and I don't know the number these days currently, but in the past I heard a number as high as 30% of the people are reading and writing still at the fourth grade level.
Wow.
Yeah. So they got a long way to go. Believe it or not, we can help them, but it's going to take a progression from semester to semester. I think there's 6 classes they've got to go through, reading and writing. Some they can take the reading and writing courses at the same time that are appropriate, but it could take them 3 semesters or more, and if they succeed in those, maybe they have to take those twice also.
Right.
Then eventually when they get through that sequence, they can be at college reading and writing level. So important for everything you do to be able to read and write at college level, especially if you're going to try to go for a job that needs a college education. Those employers want you to be reading and writing at that level.
Right.
Okay.
And I have to think that talking to a counselor may help the student in other ways, too. It may just not be necessary. They may feel that they need to retake something that they don't.
And I've talked to Amy Blackburn on this show before, and she's very smart. But she said, ooh, now that we've done this, maybe we should also look at success rates by individual teacher. How many teachers are graduating people? Or are there some teachers that are so tough they're failing everybody just because they're really nasty?
No, you retired, Jay.
Yeah, no, it's not me now, so they can't look at my record. But excuse me, Amy, and of course, the opinions on this show are not necessarily those of anyone else here at the college. And apparently I disagree with Amy Blackburn on that. On the flip side, not only are some teachers maybe really tough in their own personal standards for their own individual sections, but what about the teachers, and I know a couple, and you must know this too, Amy, that pass everybody if they can even just exist. I'm sorry, that's an over-exaggeration, and most teachers here at Henry Ford have standards, and they meet what's expected of a college student for their subject in their class, and we're very happy with that, but there are a couple, and maybe they're part-time, maybe they're full-time, that even those here on the faculty, we kind of know who are the teachers that are not quite as strict in their standards. And so if you're going to flip-flop and say, well, who are the tough teachers that are way too tough? Well, I'd say, who are the teachers that are way too easy? Now, there's only a couple. I mean, we have 200 full-timers here. We have another 600 to 800 adjuncts or part-time teachers. Everybody has to follow course guidelines for what is expected outcomes, but teachers do it in a variety of different ways, and that's, of course, academic freedom, and that's a good thing. I don't think that's the right way to go, Amy, and I have to say, she just expressed her opinion, and that's fine.
Right.
But there are many, many reasons why a student may not succeed the first or the second time.
Sure.
And personally, I would think that in most sections that are required, there are several different teachers teaching the same class. So maybe the student might want to take a different teacher, if it's a teacher issue or a standards issue, who's teaching that same class, take a different teacher that same class next time around.
Right.
But the counselor could advise about that, too.
And, but so can your class. Don't think for a second that the students don't know who the tough and who the easy teachers are. They all do.
Yeah, word gets around.
You don't even have to go to Rate My Professor. You can just ask.
Well, there's also things, Dennis, if you want to really get into educational philosophy, and I'm sure you don't and our listeners don't care, but really, some teachers will require a little more reading.
Mm-hmm.
And if your reading skills are not all that together, that class will be more challenging to you.
Absolutely. Good point.
Maybe some teachers actually require an oral report in class.
Another good
besides
point.
A written paper. Maybe you have to get up and make a class present. And some people are a little, maybe they haven't taken the Speech 131 course, they're a little more nervous confused or it's such a new experience that they won't do well in that class because it has a required oral report. So there's different learning skills and listening patterns and patterns, and some teachers do it a little differently than others. Same outcome goals, but different methods to get to those goals. And so a student does need to be a little bit savvy about their own situation and what teachers will not be holding them back by their slightly different approaches.
Well, it's not even slightly. That's a really good point. My intro to telecom instructor, no names, but he or she, basically every single assignment, including midterm and final, were written papers. If you don't like to write, you did not pass that class. I mean, serious. Every single assignment was writing.
I guess we should have the same caveat that is buyer beware here or student beware about online classes compared to classroom. Some people say, oh, it's all online. It's all on the computer. So there's no teacher issues, and it's going to be a breeze. I just take the multiple choice test online, and often it's more intense, and there's even writing required papers to be put in even more frequently online. For the requirements
that's
of the online
test. They're tougher.
So if you're not ready for online, you will fail out rather quickly. You'll discover that, and yet so sometimes in-person classes will be easier for that student. Other people who have all their skills together and they're really up to speed on computer use and so on, the online will allow them the freedom of not having to come to campus.
And you know what? If you don't have discipline, don't take an online class because they give you enough rope to hang yourself. Listen, just while you're bringing this up, I know we're going to move on, but the 31st, we do start at midnight on the 31st, which would be Sunday at midnight. You can start enrolling for classes for the winter term. I please, if you're a student and you're registered already, start doing that online because it's important. And they do have a wait list now, which is something new where you can sign up for a class. If it's full, they'll email you if somebody drops and you get right in. It's a good situation.
For those people that have their email coming into their smartphones too, they will know rather quickly that moment is available and they can get on the phone or on the internet, maybe even on their smartphone, and register back in if that opening happens. That's really speedy. We used to have wait lists many years ago, but like they would send a letter to your house. Well, by that time, somebody in person here had already taken the seat.
That was back when we had mail to your house.
Amazing.
Just kidding.
Yeah, post office still survives somehow. I wanted to mention we have about 6 minutes or so, 5 minutes left in the journal for today, that the local papers are more important now than ever, both the Press and Guide and the Dearborn
Times Herald,
because of the letters to the editor. So it's not just the stories about the election coming up, but the extensive opinions. Some of these letters to the editor are longer than the stories about the election. And so just a quick summary here. On Sunday, October 23rd, Michael Albano, who's always been a city supporter, of course, and we've talked to him on this show, I remember, in the last year or so. He has an advocacy basically for the millage proposals on the Dearborn city ballots, although at the end he gets a little flip-floppy. Well, find out for yourself and make your own decision. But he gives many good reasons why that you should vote in favor of both of those millages in Dearborn. Of course, I say of course, Albert Foster, who is the conservative editorial columnist, if you want to see his position in that way, Republican editorial position, he asks, can everyone afford to pay a higher tax bill? So he's sort of against the Dearborn millages, at least the main one. And I have to answer, of course not. Of course not. That's why if you're not as rich, you live in a less expensive house and your tax bill is less.
Right.
Okay. Now, are you suggesting to pay for services that are necessary in Dearborn, Mr. Foster, a graduated income tax? Okay, most people wouldn't like that. So nobody likes to see costs go up in any area. But in a way, this is, to me, I always flip-flop and see this as just a reestablishment of the money you didn't have to pay for the last several years because the property taxes actually have gone down. And this is just trying to get us back up to support the services that we want, and not even, as Lisa Hicks Clayton said, even in Dearborn Heights, if they get that almost 3% increase because of the Headley override,
right,
would allow them to do that, they'll still be behind what the costs are going to be. So they're still going to have to cut.
$1.5 million.
So, like, yeah, nobody's saying, hey, these millages we'll get everything we ever wanted. No. Neither city is going to have that. So
no.
You can read Albert Foster's opinion. Also, Madam Tax Cut herself, or Madam No New Taxes, Rose Bogart, never met her in person, would like to someday, although somebody said I did interview her like 10 years ago, and I'm sorry, Rose, if I don't remember the moment. Maybe it was by phone. I don't remember meeting you in person, but she has a very good opinion how she is against the Dearborn Heights Headley override, and you should read it closely, decide for yourself if her arguments are those you agree with or not. Turning to, I don't think the Times Herald I wanted to bring up, Paula Hampton Stokes, in the Wednesday, October 19th, I know it's going back. That's the day that I was. That's the day I left for Austin.
He's going to cover everything I did.
But this is also in the Press and Guide. She has a letter to the editor that she is in favor of in Dearborn the basic operating millage, and in favor of the additional support for the library in Dearborn, but she's really confused, and then since she was on the city charter, she's against the civil service millage proposal to eliminate the Dearborn Civil Service Commission. And
right,
we don't know, because we won't know until November 2nd, which is next Wednesday,
right,
whether or not the courts will forbid and invalidate it being on the Dearborn ballot.
Okay.
So if you've already done absentee ballots, they won't count those
right,
if the court says it's an illegal proposal for several reasons.
Right.
But there's been a lot of criticism. Is it political? Do they just want to get away with kick Marge Powell out because of what she said and done over the years? So there's still some controversy, certainly, about that, as well as, of course, raising your taxes on the first two.
Right.
So read Paula Hamilton Stokes Stokes opinion back in the Press and Guide. I'm still not sure they put opinions and letters to the editor up on the Press and Guide website. So if you don't have the paper, that's a problem.
I've seen editorials. I have, but yeah, not on a consistent basis.
Okay. And Highway 61 will be starting in just a moment. I know our podcast recording is going to be kicking off, but also in just surveying these letters to the editor in the Press and Guide from the 26th, just 2 days ago, as this show is broadcast, Suzanne Todd in Dearborn Heights has a long letter, and she is in favor of the Headley ride. Headley override.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's very, very interesting and very in-depth, and all these people are intelligent, and I think it's good to read them and make your own decisions before things happen. There's a little more going on here, but it says Kindle users can download free books from the Dearborn libraries. And you don't have to have a Kindle, by the way, folks. It just happens to be in that e-reader format. If you have any Mac or PC, they say, and you're a Dearborn Public Library cardholder, as long as there is a Dearborn Public Library,
right, so at least
you
for
can
a little
actually
while
get these books and read them, whereas otherwise, now, of course, Kindle has a lot of free books, if you know about that system. A lot of the older books from before 1920, classics, you can get for free anywhere, anytime. But the ones that actually cost money, like the latest releases in mystery or nonfiction science or whatever,
sure,
you can get it for free through the library, and you can get it on most every PC or Mac. I have to say, I have a Mac at home, and it's an older machine, and it only uses operating system 10.5.8, and they don't have a Kindle reader for that.
They don't.